organization. We're proud to be part of an initiative where we are rotating our staff from our district office and from some of our research partners up to the Operation Hope Center in Harlem, where we're offering technical assistance and counseling resources in that location. I think one of the challenges we have as an agency, and a lot of times our locations are federal buildings or other things, this is a great opportunity for us to actually go where people are, into a location, into an environment where we're trying to be a positive part of that forward. And John has really been on the forefront of raising awareness around age literacy and actually doing something about it. So he's also was recently appointed this year by President Bush to be Vice Chairman of the President's Council on Age Literacy. And he's just a tireless advocate for poverty eradication through entrepreneurship and through financial literacy, and sort of giving people the tools, the sustainable tools, to be able to make a difference in our lives. So please welcome John Bryant.
Let's see where you're sitting.
Good afternoon, or good morning, shall I say. I am honored to be here today. I want to, of course, give acknowledgement to, I'll deal with the administrator last, my friend Anoop, who is the associate administrator for entrepreneurship, who is amazing. I saw Mike Pappas here and so many other, Nick Owen, so many other people from the SBA that makes it work. You don't do business with companies or governments. You do business with people. And there's 6 billion people in the world, but there's nobody just like you. Everybody's unique. Ed Kramer, who is the associate administrator, associate supervisor for supervision for banking here in New York, is on our board. He's using his expertise, to make the world a better place. Didn't have to do it. Could have stayed in the private sector. Could have been comfortable making six, as I understand, seven figures. I'm going to underscore that here in a minute, because he then came into government service where you make very low six figures if you're lucky. And on some days it may feel like four figures. Some days it may feel like his hand has four fingers because it feels like one was cutting off, because no good deed shall go unpunished. This is a man who's given his life to public service. I think he's one of the best administrators in the history of the SBA. He has come at it with a get-it-done mentality, believing that PhDs are good, but PhDs are even better. And nothing would be better as if he became the next HUD secretary. Thank you very much. Before I say anything else, and I want to recognize the real boss in my life, my wife, Sheila Kennedy Bryant, who's not here, her mother, my mom, Janie Sykes Kennedy, who is here, her sister, a business owner here in Harlem, Terry Kennedy, who runs a yoga studio in Harlem. Please raise your hand, Terry and Janie. A business owner in the making, Daniel, who last year had a book that was voted most popular in the school district in New York, which is a big deal. And was one of a few kids to ace the test in the city of New York. In an environment where we've made dumb sexy, we need to make smart sexy again. And I think it's really great that he's here today. Thank you for being here. And this really is a good segue into my remarks. And David Latimer, wherever you are, from ICIC and others, thanks to ICIC and Dr. Porter for putting this on. This really frames, I think, my remarks, talking about Daniel and talking about Terry and talking about real people, where the rubber meets the road. I'm really about a few things. I'm about policy, partnerships, people, and progress. And you notice I didn't mention power. I think that the real power is engaging policy with partnerships with people that create progress. And I founded Operation Hope. I'm from South Central LA. I'm from Compton, California. Some people will change their bio or their resume as they get upwardly in life. I'm proud of coming and saying I'm from South Central and Compton. I was an entrepreneur at 10 years of age. Started my first business when I was 10 years of age, a neighborhood candy house. People would walk past my house and detour the liquor store to buy candy. And I figured that was a good business because they'd be late for school and get pink slips. And so I went to the guy who ran the candy store and told me he's selling the wrong kind of candy. He said, "Go away, little boy, I have a college degree." I said, "That's nice, I've got cavities." And he didn't quite get it. So I got him to work. I worked for him for 3 weeks, learned how to buy, wholesale, and sell retail. And I quit. My mother told me she loved me every day. I had no self-esteem problem. My dad was a business owner, so I had that bug in my genes. And so I quit, bummed $40 off my mother, went to Iris Food Store, got inventory. Why Iris Food Store? I saw it on the side of the box in the inventory section of his liquor store. It said Iris Food Store, where he bought his candy. Unfortunately, in my neighborhood, you bought candy from the liquor store. Go figure. We took that inventory, brought it into my house, which was on the way to school. I made $300 a week, put the liquor store out of the candy business, found girls, lost the business. That's another story. But at 10 years of age, at $300 a week, I figured out that I could get rich legally. Now, you look at the dropout rate today. The statistics were just released by Secretary Spellings a couple weeks ago. All dropouts in this nation are about 30%. That's everybody, white, black, red, brown, and yellow. This is not a minority issue. We're living in an information age now. Now, dropout rates in the inner city are 30 to 50%. Let me let that sink in for a moment. 110 million minorities in this country, so you can't just sort of say this is not important. So this is your future workforce, these are your future customers, these are your future business owners, your future employees. 50 to 70% dropout rate. It is not sustainable. But I believe that these kids are dropping out of school principally because they don't believe education is relevant to their future. I mean, nobody wants a mortgage. I mean, who woke up this morning and said, "Ooh, a mortgage. Can't wait to get one of those. Give me a subprime mortgage in particular." Nobody said they wanted a car loan. They want a cool car. Nobody wants a mortgage loan. They want to become a homeowner. No one, even with all due respect, wants an SBA loan or guarantee. They want the dream of business ownership and entrepreneurship. So aspirational is important. Nobody wants an education. They want what education can get them unless you're an academic and that is your area of focus. So we need to show kids how to get rich legally. That's creating a generation of black and brown entrepreneurs. So growing up as I did, this resonated with me. My mom and dad divorced over money. Number one cause of divorce in America today is money. In 1976, my mom and dad, who were brilliant, amazing, but never finished formal schooling, owned a gas station, an 8-unit apartment building, a nursery, their own home, and a cement contracting business. Not bad for a black family in South Central LA in 1976. Not bad for any family. And people ask me today, how could you get your mind around the fact that you were an entrepreneur at 10 years of age? My response was, it never dawned on me that I couldn't because I saw my father do it. Now, my father wasn't a black role model or a brown role model or a white role model or a tan role model or an Indian role model or an Asian role model. He was a good role model. And so you look at what we're doing today. And you say, what's the connection? How's it relevant to this? Today, after the riots in South Central LA in 1992, we launched America's first nonprofit social investment bank, Rainbows After Storms. You cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. And people said, you're crazy. They said, nonprofit social investment bank, that's an oxymoron, John, and you're a moron. They said it would never work. We had a $61,000 operating budget. That was brokered by Mayor Tom Bradley, a Democrat, and then President George Bush, a Republican. At that point, I realized that business and money was bipartisan. And somebody asked me recently, why are you hanging around with the president? I said, well, let me guess. He's the president? There's only one. This is some good stuff I'm throwing at you, and you're just flat. I said, there's one president at a time, and you've got to embrace you've got to embrace change and you've got to see friends everywhere. And so when I created this organization, I decided one of the tenets had to be that we had to create friends everywhere. The other thing I decided was we had to produce results. So we wanted a partnership between government, community, and the private sector, which is why I love you guys being in our office in Harlem, bringing it to the streets, into the neighborhoods where people need what you have the most. So government, community, and the private sector. So we now have raised $400 million from the private sector. It's not government subsidies. $400 million from the private sector, from 400 of the largest banks, insurance companies, investment banks, financial firms in the world, who we have convinced that inner cities are emerging markets. Not wastelands, not handouts. A hand up, not a hand out. About civil rights, about making free enterprise and capitalism relevant to the poor. About making free enterprise and capitalism work for the poor. About seeing these communities not black, white, red, brown, or yellow, but seeing green. How? So we said it has to be government, community, and the private sector working in partnership. Then we said, well, we need to organize this like a business. We're a nonprofit, but we're still a corporation with a bottom line. We should even have a shareholder meeting, because all of our customers are our clients, our investors are our partners are our investors, and the public is our shareholder. And we should be accountable transparently to produce trackable and measurable results. We then got about 2,000 nonprofit partners, 1,200 of which were schools, because we knew that you couldn't sit in an ivory tower and reach your customer. I know this sounds basic, but you'd be amazed how many people miss these simple lessons. You end up preaching to the choir otherwise. You end up in conferences talking to yourself. So we had to have partners. We have 2,000 partners in communities around this country. We're in 51 U.S. communities. Then we have 100 government partners on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. As I mentioned, we have President Bush, which is a partner, and I commend him, which I'm about to tell you something he did that is pretty amazing, and I really commend him for that. And then we also have our first black president, President Clinton, who's a partner. There's coffee outside for anybody who's missing this good material. And then we broke it into four divisions. We have our Banking on Our Future division. That is youth financial literacy. So there are two national delivery platforms for financial literacy in the country. Junior Achievement, which is basically market economy, big business, basically agrarian farmers 100 years ago who wanted to show their children how to run their business. I'm generalizing, but it's a generalization that I think sticks. They've done a really good job. But then the inner cities, you have Banking on Our Future. We taught 280,000 children checking, savings, credit, investment, the history of banking. And in South Africa, we teach a course in entrepreneurship and a course in dignity, which is the real wealth, because when there's not enough jobs to go around, you gotta create self-employment projects and entrepreneurs. And when I was in South Africa, people say, well, how can you create, talk about entrepreneurship? Look at this shanty town, there's nothing but poverty here. I say, you're looking at it the wrong way. When I went to South Africa, I went to Alexandria, went to that township. There was no roads, there were no, the walls were porous, there was no lights, there were no running water. But on every corner was a woman on the corner doing someone's hair for a fee. That's an entrepreneur. On every block was a little booth selling cell phone time. That's an entrepreneur. You know, you need to eat somewhere or something. You need basic transportation. You need entertainment. You need, I'm not talking about complicated stuff. I'm talking about unmet need. So they're not minority communities, they're underserved communities. Magic Johnson built the theater in South Central LA after the riots in 92, and everybody said, Mr. Administrator, everybody said, oh, that's such a charitable act. That's really wonderful you did that. I said, you know, I know Magic Johnson. He's a good man, but that wasn't charity. You give a few hundred dollars to your favorite nonprofit a week if you're a good person for charity. You donate to your church if it's charity. You donate to your local school if it's charity. You don't put up $30 million for charity. You put up $30 million when you want to get paid. So he partnered with Sony, doesn't sound like a charity to me, to build a theater in South Central LA. He was, oh, that's very sweet, but we know it's not going to make any money. What you didn't know maybe is that blacks are 9% of the U.S. population. We're only in 10 places, Philadelphia, Harlem, Detroit, L.A. We're 9% of the population, but we're 25% of every movie ticket sold in this country. Did you hear me? 25% of every movie ticket sold in this country. We go to the movies once, we go to the movies twice, we rent the video, we bootleg copy it, My sister, she's gonna hate me saying this, I know you're webcasting, my sister, not this sister, another sister, my sister has in her house a roll of videos. They all say Blockbuster on them. She's a bad thief. She's gone to the video store, rented the video, copied the video, probably not legally, copied the cover. I said, Monty, what? That's my sister's name. Monty, what? If you're gonna do this, do it right. You've got like 50 felonies here. But the point I'm making is that this is a huge marketplace. And not only did Maggie Johnson do it in South Central LA, right here in Harlem is yet another theater. Do you know that theater in South Central LA is in the top 10 of sales for the entire Sony chain? The Starbucks that Magic Johnson built in South Central LA is one of the top performing Starbucks in the entire chain globally. So we decided that in a country that's rooted in democracy and capitalism and free enterprise, it's a sin not to teach your children about checking, savings, credit, investment, and the history of banking. Now, some of you may not think this is important. Let me see if I can drive this home. Subprime mortgage crisis. That didn't hit like I thought it should. Let me see if I can go a little further. Any bankers in here? Okay, feeling a little pain, a little relevancy. I see a bank, this guy was brave enough to raise his hand. I saw there's some other people in here who have to be bankers. I'm looking at you and you're not raising, it's fine. I like bankers. But my point is that if you are a banker today, you understand the relevancy of financial literacy better than you ever have, because here's the issue. If it's not speculation, fraud, misrepresentation, or greed, it's massive levels of financial illiteracy. People who ask not what the interest rate was, but ask what the payment was. And you never ask what the payment is when there's an interest rate attached. There used to be two taboos in this country. It was sex and money. Sex is off the hook. There's a TV series called Sex in the City. But the last taboo today, the thing that nobody wants to talk about, everybody wants, is money. I mean, when was the last time you called your girlfriend and said, my credit score is 500, what's yours? I would argue that a woman spends more time making sure that she buys the right pumps at the department store than she does making sure that the mortgage fits. I mean, I don't know a woman who would buy some pumps and force her foot in it, and you know, toward the end where, I mean, I've never done this, but it seems uncomfortable. If my guess is you make sure the shoes fit. Yes?
Yes.
We got a whole bunch of people with mortgages that don't fit. Don't make any sense whatsoever. This is massive levels of financial illiteracy. 80% of our economy is on the back of the U.S. consumer. So says the Federal Reserve. And if you're living in New York and you're making less than $50,000 a year, you are struggling to make ends meet. I don't care whether you're white, black, red, brown, or yellow, you just want some more green. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
So it's not a racial issue. It's an economic issue. The issue used to be race and the color line, is now class and poverty. So we have a mission to educate 5 million children in financial literacy, to recruit 25,000 volunteers like you to go into classrooms to teach financial literacy and entrepreneurship and a course in dignity. There's a difference between being broke and being poor. Being broke is economic, but being poor is a disabling frame of mind and a depressed condition of your spirit, and you must vow never to be poor again. Why is this relevant? Why is it important to have 25,000 volunteers? The book The Tipping Point says that a community that has 5% or better of role models in a community is stable. This to me is, it may sound distressing, to me this is a ray of hope. At 50% of the community, it's stable. The community where you live in and I live in, again, is class, not race, it's stable. At 20% role models, community where we live in, it's stable. At 10% role models, stable. I'm talking about bankers and lawyers and doctors and CPAs and teachers. At 5% role models, it's stable. At 3.7% role models, everything negative explodes. Teen pregnancies double. Dropout rates triple. Crime comes off the charts. Why is this? Is it because it's a black community, or a Hispanic community, or an Asian community, or an Indian community? Is it because some other race is somehow defective? By the way, there are more poor white people in America than poor anybody else, but I will leave that alone. No, none of those things are correct. It's because you can no longer reflect, respect, remember, understand, or emulate a mentor or a role model that is mainstream and successful. So why do kids in the inner city want to become rap stars, athletes, or God forbid, drug dealers? Because they're not dumb, they're misdirected. They're emulating what they see. And I'll say something that's politically incorrect. Drug dealing is highly immoral. It is unethical. It is a disgusting enterprise. And you should go to jail. But if you are a successful drug dealer, you're not dumb. You understand import, export, finance, marketing, upsell, downsell, wholesale, retail, marketing, geography, territory. Are you with me? So you're not talking about dumb people. You're talking about misdirected people. So the Banking on Our Future program is a way to reset the future generations. It's a way of embedding in their DNA at an early age the language of money, showing them free enterprise and capitalism. Dr. King once said, and Andrew Young, my mentor, repeated, we integrated the lunch counter, but we never integrated the dollar. What good is civil rights, the ability to access his hotel, if you don't have civil rights, the ability to pay the bill? You know, you guys are really, this is a church I'm giving you here, and you just flat. So I know you're getting tired of me, so we're gonna would you say spell it out?
We're spellbound.
Spell, yeah, whatever. So then let's go now to the adult piece, Banking on Our Future. The Hope Center. We have a Hope Center in Harlem. We partner with the SBA. We have one in Anacostia, that third world country outside of Washington, D.C. That's 10 minutes from the Capitol. By the way, Anacostia, where Frederick Douglass has his home there to this day, that is a gold mine. It's lakefront property, 10 minutes from the Capitol. Here's what's going to happen. People are going to say, I'm tired of driving an hour to get home. And they're going to build, you mark my words, in 5 years, townhomes right there in Anacostia with businesses to infill, to support them. It's going to be called a community, and it won't be a black community, it'll be a mainstream. You know, this whole thing about a black community really just amazes me. You know, Harlem is, you know, that's, they call it Harlem. Help me out here. It's Manhattan's an island, Central Park, upper west side of Manhattan, upper east side of Manhattan. You with me? Lower Manhattan, Harlem. Okay, you didn't get it. Okay. Let's try this one more time. Mr. Administrator, can you give me one more time to do this?
All right, go.
Okay, one more time. It's the HUD secretary, designated administrator, I gotta get this right. Central Park, right? White people, white people, white people, black people. Now, with increasing wealth and increasing population and finite land, after a while, white folks and black folks are not so bad. Do you know that they're selling townhomes for $1.5 million on 125th Street today? In the middle of what we call a mortgage subprime crisis. A teardown in Harlem is $750,000. When we built the Hope Center in Harlem, we were told that it was $50,000 a month to lease a facility. That's $750,000 a year and you don't own it. You know what that says? That's no longer Harlem. That's Upper Manhattan. You with me? So 10 years ago, small businesses in Harlem, tell you the impact of financial literacy. 10 years in Harlem, survey done. Do you want a long-term lease? No, we don't want a long-term lease. We don't know what's going to happen. 2 years ago, same survey done on small businesses. Terry knows the survey. Do you want a long-term lease? Now the landlord doesn't want you on a long-term lease. Why? They're selling to Starbucks, Best Buys, and big box retailers, and Magic Johnson with that new Sony theater. Because they realize that this is an underserved market. So these Hope Centers are a cross between a bank branch and a Kinko's for economic empowerment. It's one-stop shopping for changing your life, converting a check-cashing customer into a banking customer, converting a renter into a homeowner, converting a small business dreamer into a small business owner and entrepreneur, moving you up and out of poverty, and we became the first nonprofit in history to build a bank branch and sell it to a bank. $3 million. Now, why did the bank do that? Was it charity? Again, $10,000 is charity. $5,000 is charity. Maybe with somebody who's really doing well, $25,000 is charity. When you write a check for $3 million, you want a return on investment. Yes?
Yep.
We had 15,000 customers coming through 5,000 square feet per month. in one location in South Central LA. We created 1,000 homeowners and small business owners who are paying their loans, and we proved that over 3 years we can raise your credit score from 550 points to 625 points. Guess what? You walked in a black borrower, you walked out a green borrower. You walked in, nobody wanted to give you a loan. You walked out, every banker is standing in line, tripping over themselves, trying to finance your enterprise. I'm proud to say that this is not some conceptual conversation. There's a small business owner, an entrepreneur, a wannabe, walked in our door named Ryan Taylor with a dream. He said, I need a $10,000 loan. I want to go to a convention in Las Vegas to sell my clothes, my idea. I said, I would really suggest you don't give, if I give you a $10,000 loan, it's an SBA loan, one of the micro loans. You will have to pay it back, and you're going to waste your money. You're going to just fund this convention. He was hard-headed. I know what I'm doing. He went, gave him the loan. He lost his money. He came back, responsible, hand up, not hand out, said, you were right. I need another loan. I said, you got to pay the first one back. Fine. I need a loan. How much? $35,000. Now, this time, you need a business plan. You need to go to the SCORE people, make sure that they give you some counseling, go to our counselors, make sure that you have the right thing. He went, came back, got another loan for $35,000. He stuck to it. Entrepreneur works 18 hours a day to keep him getting a job. He worked from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. Anoop. Today he's making $500,000 a year. He's paying his taxes. He's raising his children. He started a nonprofit himself that is now paying it forward and teaching young people in local schools in South Central LA how to become entrepreneurs. He made the suit and the shirt that I'm wearing today. I'm not wearing this suit and shirt out of charity, and I certainly can't afford an expensive one, so you know it's affordable. I'm wearing it because it's good quality. I mean, I don't know anybody else who could do a better job than what this entrepreneur did. Now, this is a young African-American with a dream that his life could be different. Now, he's got a banker today. He's got a loan he's paying. He's got taxes he's paying. He's got property taxes he's paying. He's got consumer taxes and sales taxes that he's paying. He's got employees that he's employing. He's paying health insurance. He's got vendors that he's got in business. He's got a brand. He's got a net worth. And he's got self-esteem and dignity. And that's the future of America. Because 70% of all, I believe, all jobs today are coming out of small business. Something like 50 to 70% of our economic activity is small business activity and entrepreneurs. And so I want to really drive this home, and let me sort of bring this to a close. We also have a Hope Coalition America division, which does emergency economic disaster response. Once again, rainbows after storms. We've served 100,000 survivors of Hurricane Katrina. You remember the person on the TV who said they couldn't get a FEMA payment because they had no bank account to wire it into. 25% of all minorities have no bank account in the richest country in the world. 40 million people in this country have no bank account. Bank account. It's a sin. And it's also a market opportunity. Let's go to the inner city right now. Inner city residents spend $10 billion a year on ghettoized financial services. Payday loans, rent-to-own stores, check cashers, money lenders. Do you know there's now a renting rim store? Okay, you didn't get that. Maybe you don't know I need to break this down. Anoop gets it. You know the 20-inch rims with the spinners you've heard about? Low profile? There's a renting rim store. 10,000 square feet, inventory, financing, insurance, a renting. Do you know how low you gotta be to rent some rims? There is a market opportunity. You can do well and do good. When you're being run out of town, get in front of the crowd and make like a parade. $10 billion a year is not little money. Let me give you some context. $10 billion a year is what Wall Street earns on mergers and acquisition fees every year, and they're fighting over themselves for a fraction of 1%. And in the inner city, you've got margins that are off of the chart, and no one's competing for these customers. Black people spend $900 billion a year. Latinos spend $900 billion a year. You know, the largest condiment seller in the nation used to be ketchup. It's now salsa. Go figure. The brother in South Central said, man, why are all these Mexicans in South Central? I said, do you know what Los Angeles means? They just coming to get their stuff. Finally, I got some life in this room. So now let's bring this home. And now we're doing our work internationally. We have 51 communities in the U.S. We've helped 1 million people. We've helped 270,000 children get financially literate. We have 6,000 Hope Corps volunteers. We have 1,000 homeowners and small business owners. We have 400 partners, 2,000 nonprofits, 100 government partners, including the SBA. And now we brought this to the President of the United States and said this is a national priority. And for the first year, with all due respect to him, he didn't pay attention. He was focused on other things. I understand that. There's a lot of priorities. And then we had a subprime mortgage crisis. And I said, Mr. President, the reason these people are not paying their mortgages is they asked what the payment was and not what the interest rate. Now, these aren't poor people. These are middle class, mainstream workers making 5 and 6 figures, massively financially illiterate. And then I went to the Secretary of Education and said, Mr. Secretary, the reason No Child Left Behind is not working like you want it to is that these kids are dropping out of high school because they don't believe education is relevant to their future. How do you make it relevant? Show a kid how to get rich legally. The best thing this country could do is to go to these men and everybody else in the SBA and all the beautiful people running this organization and create a massive nationwide campaign to create a generation of young black and brown entrepreneurs. Because if you've got a public record, you're not getting a job at Wells Fargo. I love Wells Fargo. I love Capital One. I love Bank of America. But they have standards and criteria. They're going to run a background check, and you're going to be done. But you can become an entrepreneur and get funded by Wells Fargo, Bank of the West, and J.P. Morgan Chase, and all the rest of these organizations. You can do well and do good. And so the president finally said, I get it. I understand how it relates to my policies. And so what do you want me to do? Which was dangerous to ask me. And so Secretary Paulson came back with a recommendation to create a President's Council on Financial Literacy, and I'm proud to say that on January 22nd, the President of the United States signed an executive order making financial literacy the policy of the United States government. So let me end where I started. I'm here because I respect this agency, but I respect the agency because of the people who run it. Because you don't do business with governments, you do business with people. The author Deepak Chopra has said, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. People matter. And so I respect this man and his integrity, and when he says something, he does it. I respect this man, he has integrity, when he says something, he does it. We signed this executive order, which means that every federal agency has to now incorporate financial literacy into what they do. I didn't have to call the SBA. I got a memo and a call within a week. We'd like to create the SBA Office of Entrepreneurship, Education, and Empowerment to make financial literacy real for every young person in America. Will you help us? Thank you for your leadership in that area. We will make that real. So then the president created the President's Council and made Charles Schwab chairman, made me vice chairman. We will serve two presidents until 2010. I was joking with a friend of mine. I said, when was the last time you saw a president in a time of crisis put a brother in charge of money? You guys are really tough. So I think this is a wonderful opportunity to do well and do good. And the president and the administration and Secretary Paulson have been great. We've already created Money Math, a curriculum for every middle school child. We want to get it into every middle school in America. We're going to do this SBA initiative. We have an unbanked committee that I will chair. And the first thing we're going to do is to assemble regulators, the secondary market, bankers, and Wall Street, and under a theory that lending post-crisis has to continue under some reasonable basis. Let me say this for the record. There's nothing wrong with subprime lending. Subprime lending has done more to lift poor people out of poverty than anything else in the last 50 years. Responsible subprime lending. The problem is irresponsible subprime lending, predatory subprime lending, greed-based subprime lending, and financially illiterate subprime lending. A negative amortization mortgage is okay as long as you don't give it to somebody who makes $20,000 a year. Adjustable rate mortgages are okay for Steve, for the administrator, at his income level, but it probably doesn't work for somebody whose income doesn't fluctuate with the interest rate. So these products are not necessarily bad until you put them into the bad or the wrong environment. And so we want to make sure that after this crisis is over, that lending does not is get cut off for the Terry Kennedys of the world who are trying to run a business, to employ people, to provide services into communities, to do well and do good, and that the loans that you fund that pay will continue. And by the way, some bankers need some financial literacy education too. So our mandate is to make sure that financial literacy gets in the schools and the workplace, that the unbanked get banked, that we create a policy around this country around so that every child gets financial literacy, that there's a policy for business and financial literacy, and that we ingratiate this and ingrain this as a policy for this government, a value going forward. So let me stop here and say thank you. Thank you for showing up today. Thank you for caring. Thank you for giving more than you have to. A friend of mine recently told me that to sin, the greatest sin is not to do bad. All men will do bad. Thus all men will sin. The greatest sin is not to do good. The greatest sin is not to do good. Can you do well and do good? Can you do well by doing good? Can you just not focus on picking the man up by the side of the Jericho Road? Mr. Lattimore just finished divinity school. He'd know this story. And I'll end with this story, and maybe this is a capstone for the way we go forward in a new philosophy of capitalism of win-win, not win-lose. Martin Luther King Jr. was in Israel. Andrew Young was with him. He came back from the Jericho Road, very emotional experience. The reporter said, Mr. King, you remind me of the Good Samaritan on the Jericho Road. And it politically incorrect for him to say anything, he said nothing. He said to Andrew Young later, Andy, I respect the Good Samaritan. We need Good Samaritans. I love Good Samaritans, but I don't want to be a Good Samaritan. I've been on that Jericho Road. It's dangerous. It goes from 1,200 feet below sea level to 2,000 feet above sea level in 20 minutes. It's got blind corners. It's got ditches. It's very dangerous. I don't want to see another one of my people sitting in a ditch along the Jericho Road. He said, Andy, I want to fix the Jericho Road. I want to pave the Jericho Road. I want to put street lights up along the Jericho Road. I want to see community development, home ownership, small businesses along the Jericho Road. I want to see Daniel educated, the ultimate poverty eradication tool, so we know better, so he can do better, empowered to save his own life along the Jericho Road. Andy, we got to fix the Jericho Road. I think if Dr. King was alive today, this would be the work he'd be doing. What difference can you make in this world? Is this your legacy, just to sort of go show up to work, to get a paycheck, be focused on me, myself, and I? Or do you want to live with something larger and more important than yourself? Do you want to leave a legacy that says that I not only got, but I gave? But I'm asking you to give a hand out. I'm asking you to give a hand up. Thank you very much.